Hey folks, thanks for checking out the podcast this week. Before we get to my guest, been doing videos, posting them on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/PaulMercurio. Some fun videos just about, you know, what's going on with me and my family during the pandemic and just some other general fun stuff. So check it out, youtube.com/PaulMercurio. And please subscribe and tell your friends. We want to build a channel. And here in New York City, hope you all staying safe with the virus and social distancing. It's weird in the city. It's like very quiet, eerily quiet. It's like after a blizzard here where nobody's out really, or if people are out, very few. Just like that, except no snow. And but it's weird. I don't like the quiet. It's making me feel like I'm not even in New York City. I need a sense of normalcy, so I feel like I'm actually living in New York City and living a normal life. I've taken it into my own hands. So every morning at like 7 a.m., I go out and around the city, I just randomly jackhammer. Yeah. You get some noise going, I feel like I'm in New York City. I try to get as close to people's bedroom apartment window as I can, you know, just to make it feel like it's true New York. My guest this week is Nicholas Pinnock, a great actor who's on a new ABC series for Life. You also know him from Captain America movie. A really, really great conversation about his acting career and this really interesting real-life role, real-life character that he's playing in this role. Enjoy it. He's a really interesting dude and a really, really great artist. And please check out the YouTube channel and stay safe out there. Welcome back to the show, and first-time listeners, welcome. My guest this week, a very, very accomplished actor in theater, television, film. You know him from Captain America, First Avengers, among many, many, many great pieces of work. He's starring in the ABC legal drama For Life, airing on ABC, obviously. Welcome, actor Nicholas Pinnock. Nice to have you on the show.
Thank you, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're in London as we speak. I'm in New York, and I hope you're all safe out there and your family's okay with all this craziness going on right now.
We're all well. Thank you very much. Hope you and yours are safe, too.
Yeah, just going a little stir crazy here in New York, you know. It's like, you know, as they say, that there's that, it's a saying, it's the little things in life. So my day is now consumed with looking forward to little things. Like I ordered screws on Amazon, and I've been tracking the package for the last 2 days of when the screws are going to be delivered. So this is now my day.
That's life as we know it right now.
Exactly.
Well, it's really great to talk. I've been a real admirer of your work. And let's talk about the show for a minute. It's loosely based on the true story of Isaac Wright Jr., who was imprisoned for 70 years to life under New Jersey's drunk kingpin law, which was a new law at the time for a crime it turned out he didn't commit. And I'll let you pick it up from there, because the story gets very interesting after that.
Yeah, it does. He then became paralegal and a prison rep. Was able to eventually get 20 of his fellow inmates out of jail and got them off their charges because they were also innocent. He then did something that nobody else did, which was he managed to create new case law to do with the kingpin charge that he used on somebody else's case, got them out to then use on his case to then get himself exonerated of the charges. He still had 70 plus years. So then he got himself to trial again and managed to overturn that conviction as well. It then took him another 9 years after he was released to get his license to become a practicing lawyer, which he's been doing since, I believe, 2017. So his journey and his life has just been absolutely fantastic. So our show is inspired by the true life story of Isaac Wright Jr. And, you know, we have so much still more to tell.
Yeah, it's a really amazing, you know, I'm a, as they say, recovering lawyer myself. I wasn't a litigator. I did corporate law, but, you know, I was in reading up on this and on the story. the attorneys that work with him now say he's one of the best brief writers that they've seen. He's got a really great legal mind for strategy, and it's all self-taught. And I think about the 3 years of intense law school training that I went through. First of all, to figure out how to teach you, just to learn it is hard enough when you're being taught by someone who's a professional at teaching law, but you have to figure out how to teach yourself, and then you have to learn it at the same time. Where did he get the facility for that? Obviously a bright guy, but where did that come from? How was he able to do that? Do you have any sense of that?
He was so determined to prove himself innocent that he did everything. He started to understand what the charges were against him and why. And once he got himself around that, he realized that, when he was listening to other inmates, that he could be a better prison rep than the prison rep that they had at the time. And that's where it all started. And then from there, it snowballed from one thing to another, to somebody then sponsoring him and supporting his journey to becoming a lawyer and taking his bar. And, he's now, an unstoppable lawyer.
Yeah. Something you said about this character was, and you're so accomplished as an actor, this really stood out to me. You said that this was a dream role because it's a look at all the different, you looked at all the different levels I could do as a person in playing this character. What are some of those levels that you found that drew you to this?
Well, there were five different aspects of Aaron that I have to explore. And that is Aaron as the prisoner, as the inmate, and who he is with all the other inmates and how he conducts himself. There is Aaron as the prison rep, which comes with something else in his relationship with the warden. There's Aaron, the family man, who he is in all of the prison visiting scenes with his wife, Marie, and his daughter, Jazz. There's Aaron, the lawyer, and how he conducts himself in court with the other with his legal team, with other lawyers, with the judge. And there's flashback Aaron. Aaron that was a free man before he was arrested. And all of those elements come with something different. And right at the core of them, we still had to keep Aaron Wallace intact and recognizable. So there are different cadences in his speech, certain words he will use in some situations that he won't with others. There's a posture difference slightly. There's a different shift in the way that he walks, depending on whether he's in his suit, whether he's in his prison greens, whether he's, with the warden, whether he's with the inmates, So all of these things come with their own different challenges, and just trying to remember and fully embody the version of Aaron that that we see at any given time, and how he code switches and why he code switches. It was by far the biggest challenge that I've had creatively as an actor.
Yeah, you actually said that it frightened you as an actor, and that really stood out to me because you've done so much really amazing work. What frightened you that you weren't sure if you were up to the challenge of being able to hit all of those different notes?
Well, here's the thing. If I come across a role that I'm not frightened by, I decline in playing it. Huh. Because if it doesn't hit me in a place where it frightens me, to push me beyond where I have been before, then I'm not really interested in playing it, because I don't feel that I can grow and I can raise my own bar and do the job any justice. So if it's something that doesn't feel like an immense challenge, it's probably best that another actor takes on that role, and they can probably do it justice in a way that I can't, because if I'm freewheeling and I feel it's too easy for me, I'm honestly, you're not going to get 100% out of me, and I'm going to be on autopilot. And that's somewhere I never want to get to in my career.
Yeah. I mean, I act a bit, but I'm a comedian, and I know exactly the feeling. Like, after a while, I have to retire some of the material because I just don't have, I can't fake the emotion behind it. And I, you know, it's gotta be real. And the audience, you know, they may not be IQ smart, but audiences are very emotionally intuitive and smart, and they can smell someone walking through it or a bullshit or a mile away. And I totally get that.
You know? Yeah. You can't fool an audience now like you used to. There is so much content out there, and there are so many good actors and actresses. I mean, it's the level of work and the stories and the production values and the quality of work, it's so good now that the audience are picking up on things that they never did before, like the cinematography, like the attention to detail, you know, how, you know, intricate those scenes were with the actors. I mean, you can't fool them anymore.
Yeah.
We have to be, better than we've ever been.
Yeah, well, that's the sign of a true artist, you know, that you want to, you know, I do think that we owe the obligation to, you know, it's like going to a museum and I say to you, what did you think of the exhibit? And you're like, well, it was okay. And I said, well, what do you mean? Well, I feel like I saw it before. Well, then is it art, right? We ought to be giving them something that they haven't seen before or didn't think that they would see, or take them to a place that they didn't think that they could go to for that hour or 2 hours.
We have to give them something to be moved by. And I've always, I've been acting 35 years, and I adopted this as a child, and I can't remember where it came from. But, you know, if people hate my performance, brilliant. If people love my performance, brilliant. Right. If they are indifferent to it, right, then we haven't done our job to the office.
Exactly.
And that for me is where I draw the line. If it's not challenging enough, then there's no point in me doing it. Because if I don't feel I can move an audience to feel something, then it's not for me.
Yeah, I call it, whether it's acting or any live performance, really, I call it sort of McDonald's performance, meaning, you know, it gets consumed and then 5 minutes later, you're hungry again. The audience feels like it just goes through them and goes away quickly. And it's like, you know, you put so much training and effort in your whole life into something like you do as an actor. Why would you want to do it any other way than to really take advantage of every opportunity you have to move the bar for you and for them, you know?
Exactly. It's the difference between McDonald's and a home cooked meal.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you mentioned sort of the detail in, you know, obviously researching the role. And Isaac said something interesting. He said in an interview, he said, quote, "I have to size you up when I first meet you. I know within 0.3 or 0.5 seconds what you're all about." It was in the context of him meeting executive producer 50 Cent for the first time. But did you incorporate that aspect of his persona as well, that sort of sizing up of people? And how important was that to you in the role?
Oh, it was really important because, especially, and I've spoken to other ex-inmates too, and they made it very clear to me that, you know, when you're inside, there's a whole other world that happens. There are different rules. There's a different way of socializing. There's a different sense of community. Everything is different on the inside to how it is on the outside. And so you have to be very, very quick in judging who's for you and who's not for you. And some of the characters, but being prison rep that Aaron is, he had to choose very carefully the cases that he took compared to the cases that he let go to the wayside. Because for the most part, all the cases that he took are tied into helping his case and him getting out of prison. So he had to be very, very, very careful in, you know, judging and sizing up very quickly whose case to take on, whose case not to take on.
Did you, you had mentioned that you did a table read and then you spent about 45 minutes after that table read meeting with Isaac for the first time. And you mentioned you changed your plan on what you were going to do with the role. How did that change? Was it as a result of that meeting or something else?
Right. So before the table read, There was like a meet and greet, and he was there, and I took him away into a room privately where he and I just chatted for 50 minutes. Mm. I had an idea of who I was going to start being, you know, the inception of Aaron in my head from the table read. I had this idea of, you know, where I could start the seeds for that to grow. After the 50 minutes I spent with Isaac, that changed, that shifted. It couldn't, there was no way it was going to be the same, because I had so much more of an essence of who he was and what he was about. And some of those things, it would have been impossible to have played Aaron without him. Absolutely impossible. And so the table read in my head changed. So my delivery changed. A lot of my intentions behind certain scenes, they just shifted slightly, because after speaking to him, there's no way they could have been the same. So then moving forward into going into filming, he had inspired me so much on that first meet that when I went back home after the table read to do more prep, I developed a walk for him. I developed a stance. I developed a certain cadence, and figured that because he had to code switch, there were these five different elements of him that I had to play with. And I presented, you know, my findings and my ideas to Hank Steinberg, the showrunner, and George Tillman, who was the director of the pilot. And the three of us really talked it out and sifted it through and, you know, picked out the attention to detail of who Aaron was going to become. And it just grew from there. And that would not have been the same had it not been for the conversation that I had with Isaac.
It's amazing. And, you know, just like clothes for an actor, the physical movement can really inform the performance and the emotionality that you're feeling. I would imagine sort of having his gait, his walk down, all of that, just you start to give off a true essence of the guy just because of a physical adjustment, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, a lot of people don't realize that your physicality when you're working is just as important as the words that you're given to say.
Yeah.
If those two things don't marry and complement each other, and you're telling two different stories, then you're confusing the audience.
Yeah.
And so it's important, even when there's nothing being said, that the story still continues. And, you know, I'm saying so many things with my physicality, even though nothing is being said. And if I'm telling a different story, then I am not doing, again, I'm not doing my job properly.
Right. Do you, just offhand, this is so fascinating to me. I'm a kind of a process geek, but is there one or two things that stand out that you, before that meeting with Isaac, you were going to approach it one way and then you said, nope, this thing I'm going to do or this approach I'm going to take isn't going to work? I'm just curious, like, what, if anything comes to mind specifically that you put off to the side after that meeting. Or changed?
Yes, I had in my head, I had Aaron as faster. Just, you know, he was his tempo, because every character that I play, as well as finding their physicality and finding their tone and their voice and certain mannerisms that are exclusive to them, I also give them a speed. And Aaron's speed before I met Isaac was a lot faster because of his eagerness to get out. That was his driving tempo. But then when I met Isaac, he's very much a thinker in the same way that I am. So his attention to detail is very, very similar to my attention to detail with my job. So I slowed him down and I gave him a lot less to say. So all during filming, luckily, thankfully, the writers and especially Hank, they trust that any decision or any input that I may have is purely for the sake of the role and purely for the sake of the story. So I would wherever I could, cut lines and say it without saying anything. And it gave me added fuel to be able to slow him down somewhat. So then when I did speed him up and I did have that eagerness, it would really shine through and be a good contrast. So we know that the audience knows that right at the core of this man is the eagerness and the hunger to free himself, but knowing that that's not the way to go about it. The only way to go about it is to think, plan, and proceed. That's the plan I had for Aaron after I spoke to Isaac.
Oh, I love this. I love that people can hear how an actor like you works. That's so eye-opening. It's really great. So this story of a person in prison, and I'd love to have you on again because I'd love to talk to you about prison reform and social justice. There's so much coming out of this show that we should try to get you back on, you know, soon to talk more, and also just your process as an actor. But I just wanted to wrap with this. So this idea of, you know, people incarcerated wrongly, and then you've heard this story too, where people act as their own lawyer and they read the books and they get themselves out. I'm not saying this isn't an original story. It is, but there are similar stories. How did you avoid, were you concerned about playing cliches a little bit, or, you know, sort of whether it was the storytelling, a cliche from this standpoint of storytelling, or the approach as an actor, did that come to mind at all? Was that a conscious effort to avoid that in any way?
No, not at all. I mean, first of all, Isaac created brand new case law that no one else had ever done. He's not one in a million. He's just one. He created new case law for another case or a kingpin charge that he added to his case to get him his retrial, to get him out of jail. So that's what's unique about this story compared to any others like this. We didn't fixate on or worry about other stories that are similar. We knew there were other stories that were similar, but, you know, none had been depicted in this way and at this time. And so we just thought, if we can complement those stories, if we can shed some light on other similar stories, if we can bring it to the forefront and help other people in those situations and get some attention and a conversation going, then we were happy. Mm-hmm. You know, there was no ego behind it that we had to be the only ones that were doing this, or, you know, we didn't want it to look like this or be like that. No, we had to get rid of ego completely and just realize that this is an international story. It's not even just exclusive to the United States. This happens globally. There is an injustice that goes on in the judicial system across the world, and there are innocent men and women who are being incarcerated because of their race, because of their stature in society, because of their social standing, and it's wrong. Isaac himself will tell you that he believes strongly that the U.S. criminal system is the best in the world, but there are some people behind it who are corrupt, and that's the problem. So where you have corruption is where you have the degradation and the negativity in the judicial system, because done correctly, it can work wonders, and you can get the reform that you need, and you can get, you know, these prisoners to, you know, find the error of their ways and not reoffend. When you put people in jail for longer than they need to do, than they need to, compared to the crime that they commit, you create criminals.
Yeah.
And this is part of a major problem. It's a major, major issue.
We
just wanted to highlight, you know, Isaac's story and stories like it.
Well, listen, I think you're right. I think everyone's redeemable. And I think you must be so excited, because to me, you're in a perfect place as an actor. You're getting to challenge yourself as an artist, but also make art that's speaking to an important social issue. And to me, that's what it's all about. It seems like, you know, a nice convergence of of two really major important things. So I think the show is terrific, and I think you're incredible. And let's get you back on, because there's other stuff I think we could talk about that would be really interesting. But for now, people need to go watch For Life on ABC, starring Nicholas Pinnock as the lead in it. And thank you so much, man. It was really, really great to talk to you.
Brilliant. Thank you for having me, and thank you so much for your support.
All right, there you go, Nicholas Pinnock. Great guy. I want to have him on again, because I really love talking to him about his process and how he approaches roles. YouTube channel is going, youtube.com/PaulMercurio. Go there, subscribe, check out the videos. We're putting videos up every several days. And stay safe out there, social distance, and hopefully we'll be done with this soon.